Welcome to the People Speak Radio Show. I'm your host, Michael Strasser. The People Speak normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. The number is 1-888-429-5471. That's 1-888-429-5471. This is a special show tonight. Our guest is Ryan Dawson. He's the author of Welcome to the USSA, Corruption in the Government and Media, and he also recently wrote The Separation of Business and State. He's also created documentaries such as War by Deception and The Empire Unmasked. His website is risetwocents.com. That's R-Y-S, the number two, S-E-N-S-E.com. Hello, Ryan. How are you this evening?
I'm good, and when I picked that domain, I never knew I would grow to the point where I was talking on television about politics. I just thought, Rise 2 cents, whatever. I would have picked something better.
I'd heard about the website a few years ago in a Ron Paul group, and I had no idea what it was going to evolve into. So,
yeah, I supported Ron Paul, and I still do. And a lot of new people found me from Ron Paul. There were a lot of other people who have been following me since 9/11, and then I picked up more during the Iraq War, of course.
But I mean, you know, I've seen you over the years get more and more blunt on the issue of Zionism since then, I think. And this is something that I see most of the people in the front lines of the so-called truth movement just skipping over. What was your experience in coming to terms with this and, you know, the Israeli lobby and other interest groups involved?
Well, they're so central. I don't know how anybody could avoid it. That's like talking about World War II and not mentioning Germany. The reason we went to war in Iraq and the reason we put sanctions on Iran and the reason we're involved in Syria is all because of Zionist interests. It doesn't benefit America, and it's just impossible to avoid. The very first video I ever made was for Palestine. I had like 72,000 views. This was before YouTube existed. When I put that video on YouTube, I had my account erased, no reason given. It was just, you know, an anti-racist video showing these people are colonizing other people, demolishing their houses, etc. But people are scared to talk about that because there's a stigma that if you oppose Israeli policies that somehow you must be anti-Semitic, which is about as, you know, a serious an accusation as saying if you accuse Obama, it's because you're racist and you hate black people, as if there's no other possible reason you couldn't like his policies. And that's how it is for the Israelis. I mean, the Zionists are absolutely central. They have the largest lobby in the United States. It's not even registered as a foreign agent like every other foreign lobby. So it's ridiculous to avoid it. But I do agree with your assessment that a lot of people in the so-called front line try to dodge it. So to me, they're not really telling that you can't be a part of a truth movement if you're not telling the truth.
No, I mean, it's just giant obfuscation all over the place. I mean, whether you're talking about spin doctor like Alex Jones or Far Out Cuckoos, I'm probably going to offend a lot of people. I think she's been on this show, like Judy Wood, you know, you're just not going to cover this issue.
She's definitely kookier than Alex Jones, but she's not as damaging as him, because when you go so far out there talking about holograms and space rays and things, most people just ignore that. But Alex is a much better propagandist, especially for Zionism. I mean, he won't even tell his audience that Palestine's occupied. He's told them the opposite, in fact. And he's a doomsdayer, just chasing every military drill there is, from black helicopters to FEMA to Jade Helm to Google controlling light bulbs in your house. And he'll bite on anything. He said Ebola was going airborne. He thinks Fukushima is going to kill everybody. Just anything to scare people, and just never really getting into the issues. And the other thing those people do, and the people who parrot Alex Jones, is they put people on vague paths to nowhere. Rather than getting into specifics and giving some names and documents, they just say things, basically saying they did it, and then there's many words for they: the New World Order, the globalists, the Freemasons, the Bavarians, the German death cult, the whatever. He switches terms every few years, but compartmentalized criminal elements, etc. But he never tells you who it is, and he won't.
No, he had Jordan Maxwell on his show, and they went on this long rant about Teutonic Zionism, and there's no such thing. They just made it up.
Yeah, he had the 13th Tribe stuff on there. Just Jonestown, I call him Jonestown after Jim Jones in the Kool-Aid. It's Kookville, it's Kookspiracy, and he's almost single-handedly created a massive stigma about 9/11, where even people who reject the government story, which I think is most people, actually, I mean, they don't want to be too vocal about it because they don't want to be associated with Alex Jones and all his other kooky stuff. They've essentially created this cult that exclusively talks about nothing other than the physics of 9/11 and not looking at the money, not following any leads at all about who did it. They just talk about Building 7 indefinitely, and they even exaggerate that so that that's not even as plausible because people will look in and debunk that too. So they've really destroyed any kind of sincere movement to investigate 9/11 by exaggerating claims and making up lies and specifically avoiding the culprits that we know were involved in 9/11.
Well, I mean, I'd like to clarify out there, and there are documentaries floating around the web, like Missing Links. I mean, I think it's got quite a few facts okay, but when you go deeper and deeper into it...
Missing Links was borrowed from my book. I used to talk to Mike Delaney. I didn't know he was a racist. He wasn't at the time, actually. And all they did was read a paper by William Pierce from the National Alliance. It was dated because a lot of the things in Missing Links are wrong. They were saying Michael Eisner was head of Disney when he wasn't at the time. They're reading the paper without even updating it. That's how little research was done in the Missing Links. It's called Who Rules America. It was written by a white separatist, and it was Jew this and that. It was disgusting. And then they put some B-roll of dancing. The only facts they really got out in there is like, yeah, all that stuff written about the media was true, but it was a little bit on the judges and Philip Zelikow, but that movie was just reiterating other people's work, and no credit was given, and then Dr. Pierce passed away, so that was that.
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to get into with that, is because toward the end of it, you know, toward the start of it, they just start with the Israeli and the Zionist connection. Toward the end of it, they try really, really hard to sell you on this anti-Jew position, and I know you don't do that, and I'd like to clarify that for the audience.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Israel's guilty of a lot of things. I mean, so is Saudi Arabia. But you can't really judge, let's say, Muslims in general by the behavior of, you know, Wahhabi Salafists in Saudi Arabia. And there happens to only be one Jewish state, and it's a terrible one. But in the case with Muslims, people can look at other states and see where they're a lot more sane than Saudi Arabia is. But in the case for Jewish states, there's only one, and it's a bad one. But you can't conflate Judaism or Jewishness with the Israeli state. It's like saying blaming the CIA's behavior on it being comprised of white people. It has nothing to do with it. Or that North Korea is full of Koreans, so that's why it's the way it is, ignoring South Korea, same race, same language, everything. That's just collectivist nonsense. There is a bit of nepotism, tribal nepotism between racist Jews, but that's an ideology. It's not like genetic disposition. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Exactly. And I mean, you touch on something there, which I think very few people do. You kind of take this middle position where, you know, there will be kind of some people trying to go and blame all Jews, but then you'll have other people on the other side who kind of try to distance, you know, themselves from mentioning people who do get into the kind of tribalism. And I think that you go the right place here by divorcing the racial issue as the cause.
Right. You shouldn't avoid people who are racist because there are racist minorities, and you shouldn't be racist either. I mean, it's a stupid ideology, but to ignore it is also stupid. I mean, there are definitely Zionists who are racist Jews. I mean, they believe in that they are the chosen race of God, and they are currently demolishing homes and racially colonizing Palestine, and there is definitely nepotism in business where they exclusively hire each other, etc. You can't ignore that level of racism that exists, but you can't extrapolate that racist Zionist Jews to Jews in general. Just, I mean, the same as any other form of racism. I mean, you can pick a group, and the same thing applies.
But I mean, wow, and it's just a breath of fresh air. I've just never get to speak to somebody who has their head on so straight about this, and you spend years kind of pulling your hair out, figuring out where everybody's at. And I've just seen you over the years, you know, as far as 9/11's concerned, and I think that you're a caliber above the rest, because it just goes all over the place, and I'd kind of want this to go into 9/11, and this is related, because you cover the topic of Zionism in both of your films that I plugged at the beginning here.
Yeah, War by Deception, which is free on YouTube. Few versions of it. There's an hour and 20-minute version, and then there's a 3-hour, 40-minute version, I think. Because one talks a lot more about the Iraq War than the other. They both have 9/11 in it, but people have to remember 9/11 led to the Iraq War legally. I mean, there was the UN Resolution 1441, which acted as the pretext to invade Iraq, which stipulated they couldn't have weapons of mass destruction. And it was lies from PNAC and these Zionist think tanks claiming that Mohammed Atta, the lead hijacker of 9/11 on Flight 11, had met in Prague with senior Iraqi officials and transferred anthrax to him. And then, of course, there was the anthrax attack, which said death to American Israel and 9/11 written on it. So Iraq had been erroneously associated to 9/11 hijackers, as well as chemical weapons or biological weapons, saying that they had anthrax. So that was the pretext for the war in Iraq. But it turned out there weren't any mobile weapons labs. They didn't have any anthrax. There was no meeting in Prague. They didn't give anthrax to Al-Qaeda. In fact, Al-Qaeda didn't even have the anthrax. It came from America's own labs. But, you know, then they went out to Ames, Iowa, and destroyed all the Ames Strait of anthrax, which is the anthrax that had been used, in the middle of an investigation. So people, you can't just neatly lop off and say, we'll talk about 9/11 or we'll talk about Iraq, because they go together. All three of those events go together. One bleeds into the other, the Afghan War too. It never would have happened without 9/11. And to me, the far greater crime than the 3,000 dead on 9/11 are the millions killed in those wars. Over a million.
That's something that people often ignore when they say, well, I don't think that the government would kill 3,000 people like that.
Oh, yeah. Our government's killed a lot more than 3,000 people. Our government, it's something else, you know. The American government has never been charged of war crimes, despite using 2 nuclear bombs, chemical weapons, biological weapons, and murdering civilians at a rate above 80%, and yet no war crimes for the United States. War crimes are just an active arm of Western power. It's only a war crime when their enemy does it.
Anyway, everyone, this is the People Speak radio show. I'm Michael Strasser, talking to our guest, Ryan Dawson, creator of The Empire Unmasked. I recommend everybody check this out. I have watched it, but it's been a while since I've gone through it. You had given me the link to this a while back.
That film is very thick. It's 4 hours and 54 minutes, and it covers the drug trade, the Afghan War, Syria, ISIS, 9/11 in very strict detail. I went over all these people who were caught, and of course the Iraq War, and it gives you the holistic picture. And I could have cut it up into a series, but I figured, well, that's up to the viewer. They can just pause it and look at the rest later, or they can watch it all in one chunk. A lot of people watched it 2 or 3 times and took notes on it, which I was happy about. That's what I was aiming at.
But I mean, you cover, you know, you kind of tie in the government's involvement with drugs in this, from what I noticed, which is an angle that I don't see anybody else coming from.
True, and people have to understand that the relationship between organized crime and, that's the mafia, and government was very tightly around narcotics trafficking, very tightly woven. And that was necessary. It's the way the CIA launders money. Before that, the State Department was doing it. The CIA took it over. I mean, the CIA runs the war on drugs. It's a war of drugs in reality. And people have to see how important the opium trade was in Vietnam and also in Afghanistan. It's much more vital than the angle most people take on the war on drugs is private prisons and throwing minorities in jail. But it's a lot worse than that. I mean, they helped finance the Contras in Nicaragua, for example, who murdered over 30,000 people. And currently ISIS gets money from illegal energy and drug trades. And so people have to see how it began in this tight relationship that was made after Watergate and something called the Safari Club. At first, I can't get into Kennedy, he's too much, it's a big can of worms, but post the Kennedy assassination, you had a tight alliance between the Israelis and the U.S. After Watergate, the CIA had to create an offshore CIA while it was being investigated, and that was the Safari Club. This is when they bring in Prince Turk from Saudi Arabia, Morocco, and France into the Israeli-American beltway. It's a sort of shared multinational intelligence agency, the CIA within the CIA, and these are the culprits behind 9/11. It went from James Jesus Angleton and Shatley over into the the current counterintelligence wing of the CIA with Kofor Black and Richard Blee and George Tenet. And these are the architects of 9/11. They were caught. We have whistleblowers like Mark Rosilli, and I mean, there's so many actually, but saying that, listen, the CIA was well aware that Al-Mihar and Al-Hazmi, who were 9/11 hijackers, were living in California and going to flight schools and refused to tell the FBI. And the FBI's own special unit tracking bin Laden was told by the CIA to shut up when there were congressional investigations into it. They weren't allowed to share that information. But the CIA had been tracking them since they went to an Al-Qaeda summit meeting in Malaysia and had met Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, which we know from WikiLeaks cables. It's one of the good things that came out of that. Or no, that was from Bradley Manning directly, or Chelsea, whatever she wants to be called. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's the mastermind of 9/11. So they knew there were Al-Qaeda operatives living in the United States and going to flight schools and didn't tell the FBI and didn't act on it. Now, either they wanted it to happen or they knew it because they were making it happen. Either way, it's bad.
I guess that kind of runs into a point I never see covered that, what do you think as far as, how the planes got where? Do you think they let these people in and that they flew them, or how did this happen? Some people say they're remote controlled or whatever.
I think they flew them. I mean, you could have a safety behind that with remote control for the last 2 miles or whatever, but you still have to have hijackers to explain why they're being hijacked. And people were on the airphones making calls, and the bodies were still there, especially from the Pentagon in Flight 93. They had the DNA of every single victim except for the baby that was on Flight 77. So they were definitely on the planes. I think they flew them. It's not really that hard to hit a building on the ground floor. Like, the Pentagon would have been the easiest, because if you can land a plane on a runway, then you can, take it further than the runway is supposed to go and hit the first floor of a building, which is exactly what it did. The World Trade Centers were a little bit harder because they were barely wider than a plane. And they hit them, but one of them hit the corner. It almost did miss, though. But, it would have been terrible to botch an operation. However, there was one plane that didn't find its target. So that Flight 93 is very mysterious, too, because the pilot on there is supposed to be this guy named Zaid Al-Jarrah. This man, two of his first cousins, and I mean first cousins, not 33rd degree cousins like Bush Kerry, like Alex Jones says. I mean his actual uncle's children were caught in Lebanon spying on Hezbollah for the Israelis. So a 9/11 hijacker and pilot had first cousins in the Israeli espionage. Both of them worked for the Mossad.
So I mean, you think that they really convinced these hijackers into this, Salafi type of Islam, and that they just had them carry it out, and maybe they put some types of explosives at the base of the building, or... Maybe.
Well, something was in the basement for sure. I don't think they convinced them. I think that Al-Qaeda is part of the CIA, has been since the Mujahideen was financed through them, through BCCI, which was the bank that Prince Turkey set up. Vandar Bush was running it at the time. BCCI was a bank in Pakistan that they had used to finance the Mujahideen. ISI as well, that's the Pakistan CIA. They were the ones laundering money through there and drug trade to pay these fighters, these Reagan's freedom fighters, to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. And it's from the Taliban or Mujahideen that you get the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, which were just the foreign fighters there. Foreign fighters in another country, just like ISIS. That's what they are, foreign fighters in another country. Mercs, mercenaries for intelligence agencies. They had been doing that, and when BCCI got shut down, they just started laundering money through Riggs Bank, which was the original bank that they used to push money through before BCCI existed. They only had that interloop when Carter went after them, so they moved it overseas. But they Al Qaeda came up with the plan. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed wanted to ram a plane into the Pentagon, but once the intelligence agencies got wind of this idea, they expanded it, made it a lot bigger, had more targets, and made sure that these guys got financed. And this is proven. I mean, the guys they knew who were living in California lived with a Saudi good agent. Omar Bayoumi financed these guys. Riggs Bank made the loan to his wife, Marguerite Duck Cook, who gave it to this guy named Osama Basnan, and directly into their bank accounts. They even bought an apartment for him and lived next to them. I mean, it can't get any more obvious. And for the financing in Florida, it was coming from this ecstasy trade, drug ring, by the Israelis that had been run out of South America into Florida. They were also living next door to them. And then, of course, you had the spies on the DEA, because you have to spy on the DEA if you're making money illegally selling narcotics, which is the infamous Israeli art students. And that has nothing to do with people on the 91st floor. I'm talking about real real events that are documented, well documented. The art students on the 91st floor weren't even Israeli. They're from Vienna, and they're real art students. They produce work and have for decades. That B thing had nothing to do with 9/11. It's all nonsense. But Hanan Sarfati was definitely a handler there. He was busted in Florida. He had moved over $100,000 they knew of in the month prior to 9/11. But of course, the most damning thing is the infamous dancing Israelis who had lived both in Florida, only miles away from Mohammed Atta, and then moved to New York and lived near him in Brooklyn too. They moved wherever he moved. And these are the guys who were filming the first plane hitting. And this kind of thing is getting ignored.
I mean, just wow. I mean,
I mean, we got their names. We have a 1,800-page FBI document, six parts from the full field investigations in the 9/11, where they flat out say, I mean, one of these guys, Mamari, said in his interrogation that he came up to the roof of Urban Moving Systems. There were five different moving companies the Israelis were using for a front spy on these guys and handle them. And he said he went up to the roof. They called him up and said, "Hey, get you your camera and come up here. They're about to take down the second building." I mean, damn. They're about to take down the second building. How do they know it's getting ready to fall? And then you look at the cell phones that were confiscated from the van from the guys that were driving around. And right there at 9:55, there were several calls made. It falls at 9:58, as if they were going around telling all their friends, "Hey, look at the tower now. It's getting ready to go down." But, I mean, it's more than that. I mean, they're busted red-handed filming the first plane hitting. They have trace of explosives in their van. Police found another van in World Trade Center 6 with explosive devices in it, same kind of van. Of course, there's the George Washington Bridge incident. I mean, it just goes on and on, but none of this is being dug up in 9/11 films. They don't want to talk about Israel, so, well, you can't. It's like talking about World War II without mentioning Nazis. It just cannot be done. You can't go further than the buildings looked funny and fell down too fast if you're not going to talk about Israel or Saudi Arabia.
Well, there's kind of disinfo floating around about that too, because you'll see these photos floating around online with their van having picture of a plane crashing into the towers, and that can't be legit.
That photo was faked, and the guy that made it was on my forum and admit that he faked it. I mean, obviously you can't have a photo of a van that blew up. And that's not even talking about the George Washington Bridge. That's talking about a van that was supposedly on King Street between 6th and 7th, which doesn't exist. That's a myth. That was disinformation to try, and it was put out there by these white supremacists, so more than likely Zionists pretending to be white supremacists, to give disinformation on this. I mean, there's no myth about it. It was dismissed by Bernard Carrick, who is the police commissioner in New York, tried to say that, okay, we pulled over these Israelis in their van, but there was no explosives, right? Bernard Carrick had been in Israel from August 26th to 29th, 2001, just weeks before 9/11, where he met Ertime Wertheimer, who's an Israeli billionaire, who gives him $250,000 in a loan. But he didn't do it directly. He went through this guy named Steve Witkoff, who's this mafia dealer in Brooklyn that has these scams on Marvel and imports or whatever, doesn't matter. But then he gives it to Carrick's wife. So this is just like Omar Bayoumi moving money around, going through his wife to another guy's wife to the hijacker. You've got this Israeli billionaire giving it to a mobster who gives it to Carrick's wife, who gives it to the police commissioner. No conditions, by the way. Just, oh, here, have $250,000. He got another $500,000 from the Gambino family in New York, which he went to jail for, by the way, for fraud. So the police commissioner in New York went to jail. But, you know, of course, he's getting bribed by this Israeli billionaire, and so he did the whitewash. He's the guy who found a passport on 9/11, by the way, in New York. Same guy, working for Giuliani, whose father was in the mob. I mean, it's endless, but this is the real kicker. Wertheimer, the same guy that gave him all the money. It's mentioned that they redacted a lot of it, but because of the redundancy in the reports, there were six different reports from the full field investigation from New Jersey, from New York, from Miami, and I'll tell you why Miami was involved in that. But they slipped up, and because Paul Kirschberg, one of these dancing Israelis, well, he's the brother of one, he was in the band, he said he was sent there by the Jewish agency to do blankety blank blank, it's all redacted. Well, guess who's on the board of governors for the Jewish agency? Wertheimer, Wertheimer, same guy that's bribing the cops. So this is a lot deeper than just these guys acting on their own, or like say they were the Mossad and they just knew it was going to happen, so they went and filmed it and messed up. No, no, they were directly involved. Because it's the Jewish agency, we're sending him there. And Paul's the oldest of the group. His brother's in the group, Sivan Kirschberg, Paul Kirschberg, Garange Smell, Omar Mamari, and Omer Elner, Oded Elner. His testimony was all over the place, too. All of them had different timelines about where they were and what they were doing on the morning of 9/11. They were lying. Every single one of them failed their polygraph test. Mamari's the only one who eventually passed. He'd only been there a couple of weeks, and the only reason he was involved with the group was because Sivan recognized him because they had been in the Israeli army together. And so, I mean, he cried during the interrogation, and he was young and he was a mess. He didn't even know that the World Trade Centers had fallen due to supposedly fire until that night when he saw a television in jail, because his partner, which is blanked out, but it was Dominic Suter, the boss, had said they're getting ready to take down the second tower. So he thought, oh, the authorities took the towers down so that they wouldn't topple over on the other buildings. That's what he believed the whole time until that night. And when he found out what it really was, he started talking to the cops. Now, Chertoff comes in and whitewashes this whole thing. We couldn't even read this report till 2011. We had to use the Freedom of Information Act to get it. And then most of it's redacted. But by comparing different newspapers that reported on it and the initial police report and then the six different FFI reports, you can start to make this sort of Rosetta Stone and piece all the names together, which is what I did and put it all in the film. But you just it's so much deeper than Building 7 fell too fast. Or look at the squibs on the building. I mean, if you want to talk about the physics of 9/11, it's like, well, the whole subway was full of smoke, so that didn't happen from a whole, 100 stories above. The lobby's all blown out before the buildings fall down. So something definitely shook the entire premise, because there are cameras filming the towers that shake a few seconds before it falls. And, you know, with it gutted above, a little shake's all it would take to get the top floors to fall into the bottom. And I'm not interested in getting into endless arguments about specifically what the explosives were made of. I would say shake charges. Thermite is unreliable as a timing mechanism. It could be C4. It could be a lot of stuff. Who cares about what type of bomb it was? You know, that's really irrelevant to me compared to who put it in there and how. And I documented how it was done and who was there, and that the five guys, six actually, that got arrested and thrown in jail, and two more that got indicted and thrown in jail recently for hiring them. We have their names. But, you know, it's like you got to tell people one-on-one, because if you Google 9/11, you're going to end up with some Jonestown nonsense. It's this huge dragnet of disinformation.
I don't think it matters what the charges were specifically, but I think it kind of discredits it for some to hear that people managed to put these all throughout the building without anybody noticing. And I don't think it was that
extensive.
Yeah,
you don't have to put them all throughout the building. All you have to do is put them on the base, which is, and you also have to disable the fire prevention systems, which they did and were caught doing. These guys, there was an arrest of a woman named Catherine Smith in Tennessee who, because she had been giving out fake IDs, mostly to illegal immigrants, because Tennessee was a state where you didn't need a social security number to get a driver's license. And serendipitously, when they did their sting on her, she had been getting these licenses for five individuals who were run by this guy named Khalil Abdallah, who was a man from Jerusalem, who had given Catherine Smith her car. They had a tight relationship that he had built with this lady so that he could get IDs for his buddies. And when they were arrested, one of these guys had on his person an a pass to do work in the World Trade Center dated September 5th. And they asked him what he had been doing there. And he said, well, we were working on the fire prevention systems. They said, for who? He said, Denco Mechanical, which there is a Denco Mechanical in Canada that has nothing to do with it. This is a guy named Sergey Denko, David Denko, who had a false business. He was arrested, and his partner, David Connell, who was also indicted, I have the indictment from the district attorney from New York, I have a copy of the whole thing, where they did not get master fire and plumbing license. They lied about their qualifications to get that. And then, of course, everyone they hired was based on deception, too. And on top of that, the World Trade Centers didn't outsource any work to on their fire prevention system. That was all done in-house. So the only way they could have been in there is if a tenant had asked them to come, and that tenant would have been Zim Shipping, which also moved out of the building and relocated in Norfolk, Virginia, which is half-owned by the State of Israel. I mean, this is all documented. I took screenshots of the documents and the indictments and the names and the mugshots and everything. It's all in the film.
Well, I think it's much more important to go with things that we can document rather than speculation.
By the way, yeah, I agree. By the way, Catherine Smith was murdered. A day before her trial, she was seen on fire in her car. They burned her so bad her arms fell off. But she still had traces of gasoline in her clothing. Now, it could be a suicide. She could have dumped gas on herself and decided while she's driving to set herself on fire. I highly doubt it. In the car that was given to her by the man from Jerusalem. But right before she was to testify, she died. I mean, not even going to court. No appeals or anything. And it was just for giving fake license. It's not like she'd going to jail for the rest of her life or something. Who knows what the sentence would have been, but she mysteriously died, and Susan Nash of the FBI concluded that it was murder. But, you know, they gave these guys, they put them in jail, and they set the bond as high as they could, but technically it was for receiving illegal licenses. They couldn't tie them to the murder since they were in jail when it happened. Someone else had to murder her. And they couldn't tie them to 9/11 because it was all circumstantial evidence that they had a pass to the trade centers and so on. They didn't figure out the rest of it until many years later.
But Ryan, I'm being told that we need to go to break right now. You're listening to The People Speak Radio. I'm your host, Michael Strasser, and we will be right back with our guest, Ryan Dawson.
That is the first 30 minutes. You can get the full hour interview at the website that is linked below or on ancreport.com as a member. Just to warn you, we take some calls, and of course, the cowards never actually called in. They only texted what they wanted, but we had the 9/11 kooks show up. Of course, none of them would Skype in or call when I asked.